G'day, everybody. Just before we start, in the phone sessions, well, definitely this one, you can win a Nokia Lumia 710. All you need to do is I'll be fielding questions via tweets. I will be doing hands at the end if you want to just put your hand up and you're still valid to go into the running for this. Best question that I get through the session will get this at my discretion. So if it's a really hard question, it might not necessarily be the best question. But that's up for grabs. You tweet WPH323 AUTechEd with your question, and I'll be going through them at the end. I'll probably be looking at the feed sometimes during the actual session as well, just in case there's any questions, but I'll probably field them all at the end. I'll cut back to the deck. So this is Build Smart, developing for Windows Phone and Windows 8. So with a very common sort of technology stack, there's an opportunity to develop across them, but it's not identical. The similarities are not necessarily exactly the same. But as I said before, my name's Vaughan Knight. I work at Nokia within the developer experience team. Our team's role is to ensure that if anybody wants to build apps for Windows Phone, that there is nothing stopping them. So if you want to build apps and you need to find developers because you've got a great idea, come and talk to us. We'll help you find developers. If you need training, if you need tooling, maybe you need a loan phone to test stuff, you come and talk to us. We'll do everything we can to help you to build apps. So that's the Twitter stuff that was just up there before. I'll just give you a quick overview of what I'll be covering off. I'm going to be talking about the challenge. What is the challenge of developing across these platforms? I'm going to talk about the platforms a bit themselves. But the main thing of this session is I'm going to be going through around about six approaches. I know there's only five there. The last one's probably just being smart. It doesn't really have a name. Those six approaches are also how you should probably learn how to do this. So I think the final approach, being smart, is not necessarily something you can start at. If you take the approaches, which is also how you probably would port an app, you'll find that by doing that, you will learn the right way to do it, or what I believe is a great way to do it. But the different approaches might work for you, different scenarios. Really complex apps might benefit under one scenario. Really simple apps might have I wouldn't want to say quick and dirty, but an easy, very quick, very simple, clean way to do it that you might not want to do on a complex application. The challenge. So there's not really a problem. There's not a big issue here to solve. There's really just a challenge. And the challenge is there's two platforms. There's Windows Phone 7.5 and Windows 8. They sit on different .NET stacks, and they also have different APIs. So some of the APIs are a little bit different. Obviously, the form factor is different. But the thing, end of the end of the day, if we're talking about from a C# and XAML perspective, if you're developing across these platforms, they are different. They have similar tools. They have Visual Studio 2010 Express for Windows Phone 7 and Visual Studio 2012 for developing Windows 8 applications. And by those two tools being different, again, you can't open the project in both of them. You open it, you'll upgrade it, and your projects don't open in each solution. That's some of the problem. And again, similar technology stack, C# and XAML, but different versions of .NET and some intricacies in the APIs. So similar is not the same. And so you can't just always take your phone code and throw it across and compile and have it work. It's just not going to happen. There's some intricacies around package names. Some of the package names aren't the same. And also, there's some packages that just don't exist. You may not have a phone stack within Windows 8, but you may not have a high-performance graphics stack within the phone. So over time, it'd be great. Those will probably come together. But right now, where we stand today, there are these intricacies that you need to work around. And there's the new approaches. So you've got async and await. Now, async and await are the new sort of asynchronous approach for Windows RT. But if you don't have that in Windows Phone 7, how do you approach having these two different ways to do things between the two platforms? So I'll go through setting up the project. So I'll cut back. To. it's an 8. Here we are. So if we look at the projects, what I've got here is two main projects. I've got my Windows Phone app, and I've got my Common Library, my functionality that I want to use across everything. So this app that I've built, if I just run it up, it's quite a simple, just an RSS reader. And the reason I used the RSS reader is I was trying to find something where there was a clash between the two platforms. And the RSS syndication libraries do have these clashes. So the application's quite simple. It runs up. And it just goes and pulls the RSS feeds from GameSpot. And it's just got some of the news that's come through. So there's, you know, an Xbox 360 news feed that's come through there. There's a Game Boy one for probably a very old article. And then there's a Neo Geo Pocket one there. So you can imagine that if you had an application that goes and talks to your web services, or an application that talks to your back-end systems, you know, this is doing something similar, but, you know, on a very sort of simple scale. So if you were to take this and you wanted to create a Windows 8 application that allowed you to show this content, how would you go about that? So if I shut that down. Oops. If I shut that down. So what we have here, and I'm going to start going through some of the approaches in a second. I have all these files here are actually all the different approaches, so I'm not going to go through them just yet because I'll be going through them as I talk through the session. And then you've got the application itself, which is just, you know, it doesn't have any of the logic or any of the cross-platform stuff in it. If I go across to the Windows 8 application, you'll see that I have two projects. One of those projects is the Windows 8 app that runs up and it shows everything. The other project, you'll notice that some of these files here, they actually have this sort of symbol, this tiny symbol, and I'm not sure if you can see it on the screen. But what that is those files are actually the exact same files that are sitting in the Windows Phone project. So under one folder, I have the common Windows 8 libraries. I've got the Windows 8 app. I've got the common Windows Phone libraries, and I've got the Windows Phone app. So if I go in and add an existing item, and the way that you link, for those that haven't seen it before, if I go into Common Phone, here's those files that actually I know cross-compile, that compile on each platform. Rather than having duplicate files that I need to maintain, that I need to update, that really I can't do source control on, I can sort of go through here, select the files that I want to add, and when I click on Add as Link, from that drop down on the button, rather than clicking on add, it'll add the linked files. And what you'll find is, if I update this file here, it will update, it's the same physical file on the file system. So when I check in these files, when I merge these files, and when I see the updates, they affect each other. So the one thing that you need to be aware of is if you're working on team projects, your developers need to be aware of what files are common. And by having duplicate files, that's not going to work well at all. But by having a single file that people know is part of a shared library, it sort of educates your team. But at the end of the day, the developers still probably do whatever they want. You'll find that sometimes you will get clashes, and that's why you need to have tests across both platforms that are testing those libraries.
Why not just use a library instead of including a source?
I'll get to that. So, going through here, you'll also see that one of the actual class files here is the actual platform specific for Windows 8. Now that file does not exist across on Windows Phone. And so what you'll see is that some of those classes, or some of those files don't exist in each project. And the reason is that you can't go and compile that and deploy that on Windows Phone. So you can't have the Windows 8 logic in a binary that you're going to put on Windows Phone, and you can't have the Windows Phone libraries and logic on Windows 8. I'll talk about portable libraries in a second as well, but we'll get to that. So what I'll do is, if I click through, go back. So So I guess what I just showed you there was, you know, you have your Windows Phone application and your Windows 8 application. You have this common code. Now, that project is not the same project in each, but it's just called common because I know that that's where I've got the code that I've linked from the other project. You don't want to put that in your actual application because it gets very confusing where everything is. But if it's in something called common and you know that's your common Windows 8 for your Windows 8 application and your common Windows Phone for your Windows Phone application. So if statements. Now, you generally don't use them a lot. Some of you may never have used them. Really what they are is just conditional compilation statements. So if I kick back to here, and I'll go into this alternate file. So this is where you start to see some of the intricacies of some of the differences. You have the syndication package names are different. So by going if Windows Phone, which happens to be the declaration for Windows Phone, it will only include the code within that section if it's on the Windows Phone platform. So here, I've only got two platforms. You can do a conditional if for every platform, but because I know I've only got Windows Phone and Windows 8, I'm just going, if it's Windows Phone, use this package name. Otherwise, you know, use these package names because I'm doing something different here. If I scroll down, What the way that I approach this, and I was going to go through and show it all, but it ends up being boring and I end up only covering this in the whole session, is this is the way that you take a Windows Phone app, if it was a Windows Phone app, and you pull it into your Windows 8 application. When you pull it across into here, you end up noticing that, you know, this is specific to Windows Phone. This code here is very specific to Windows Phone. So you put the statement around it, but then you need to supplement it somehow. So your code breaks, and then you go through, and you've got to work through your code to understand where these intricacies are. So what ends up happening is, you know, you end up adding in this, and you'll notice that this block here is really just, you know, the mirror image of that block there. So if I go in here, I'll go through the code. So the code itself is really just doing some simple sort of reading of and parsing, so I'm not going to go through that. But you notice there are other intricacies. There is a syndication item in both those different namespaces, and they're incredibly similar. But one has a publish date, and one has a published date. So, you know, you can comment around that, and this is the way that you sort of start to abstract and start to understand where those intricacies are. So you're not really designing an elegant solution. What you're actually designing is trying to understand where the problem lies. So for many of your applications, this might be the end of it. This might just be all the intricacies that you have. But then if I scroll down a bit further, there's very different approaches for actually loading that syndicated content. So Windows 8 has a syndication client, which is very lightweight and very easy to use, and it uses the sort of async await methodology that's come with Windows 8. But Windows Phone, on the flip side, it's using a callback to go and get that data from the feed URL. So that code will get used on one side, and the Windows 8 code will get used on the other side. And where that code's then called, so that it's called in the right manner, there's another statement to make sure that the async method's called the right way. So if I just cut back. And come back here. So the really good thing about the if approach is you're actually not changing any of your Windows Phone code. I mean, you are changing the files and you are adding these if statements, but you're able to visualize your code and see where those changes are. You don't rewrite your original application, so you're not changing the way the methods are called. You're not adding any sort of conditional logic to your code. You're just adding these conditional statements to what code is actually included for Windows 8, not for Windows Phone. You get non-functional compilation in Windows 8, so you can actually go through and often comment out a lot of blocks to just make sure that it compiles for Windows 8, so you get that compilation. But you need to probably then go and supplement it with the functional code that's needed there. You get to learn the discrepancies. You might not even realise what discrepancies are there. Often people get quite caught out. You know, you wouldn't think that something that had a class with the same name would have slightly different properties. You get to abstract the differences, so you know you've got Windows Phone differences over here, Windows 8 differences sitting on the other side, and then you get to flesh out the missing code, and voila, the application works. So, if I run up the application itself, you'll notice that it's just pulling through the same content. It's using the same services. It's using pretty low-scale images. But you go through and you can see that it's pulling through the same content that was sitting on the phone using the same code base, but this is a Windows phone, a Windows 8 application. So, and it's called the Awesome News application because I couldn't think of a better name. So, if I cut back across. The big problem, though, for conditional if statements is it gets very messy very quickly. You don't really know where all that code is. You've got to go and search for it. And so it's not isolated in one file. So if you want to say, hey, I want to go and look at all the Windows phone code and change the way that it does something, it ends up scattered through all the files across the entire project. If you've got a Windows phone team and a Windows 8 team working on projects separately, they end up working on the same files. And the big problem with that is that it's a source control nightmare. And that's because the if statements are really like block commenting your code. And I'll just go through this quickly because it's something that people need to be quite careful of. And that is, you have some method which does a couple of things, and then you come along and then you put in, someone comes along and does this. So someone comes along and they write this new cross-platform method wrapping do something. So if we go back, they go and they say, well, I want a cross-platform method. So for Windows Phone, I'm going to make it just do everything. I'm not going to have two method calls. And at the same time, somebody else comes along and puts the conditional code block around it. And when you merge that code, it looks like this. And what now is happening is that do this and do something are not happening on Windows 8, but they are happening on Windows Phone. So by having those block comments, you'll find, and because you're sometimes block commenting out like functions, someone can come and add a function and check that in, and it's not being executed. And sometimes it'll compile. So you need to have good tests, but at the same time, you get these use cases that just don't get captured in your test scenarios. So something very much to be aware of. You don't want to block out massive chunks and rewrite whole functions. That's why sometimes there's these line by line, just so that it's very isolated. So abstract inheritance. Now, abstract inheritance is probably the messiest of all of them, and it's not one that I'm going to recommend. And I'll sort of cut back across just quickly and start going through some of the code. Cut across here. So the issue with abstract inheritance is that you can have an abstract class, and in your abstract class you can go down and one of the things that I identified was that the publish date was different. So what we do is we have a method here to sort of set the publish date from the item. So we give it the syndication item, and then we know on one platform that'll go and update the publish date, and the other platform will update the published date. And so there's some other methods all through here. And then we also then need, because we're using abstract classes, we actually need on Windows Phone to be using the Windows Phone class that it inherits from this abstract class, because we still need to use that concrete class. And then on the Windows 8, we need to go and inherit from that the concrete. Oh, sorry, we need to go and implement the concrete class for Windows 8. So this is called the GameSpot Article Phone Abstract class, which does get really confusing. And what we're doing here is we're just going and creating. Now this is the concrete class that's inherited from the abstract approach, and we're going and implementing this for phone. But then if I go through to the actual class here, you'll notice that you need to go then and add sort of constructors to the class. You need to go through and then go and create a reader for it and another class for the reader. And so you end up with a lot of boilerplate code. And so here's our asynchronous methods that we had before. They're nicely isolated. They're not sitting in with all the Windows 8 code. But at the same time, there's all this boilerplate. It gets really messy. And if we go across to 8, I'm not sure if I put it in 8. I didn't put in 8. But the reason for it is that you end up with, for each platform that you're targeting, and there might be other platforms that you're targeting, you end up with this whole extra set of classes that if you change anything, you need to go and update all of them. Now, C#'s great. Visual Studio is fantastic because you get all the power of Visual Studio to go and update all of those files, and you can do a lot of refactoring. But at the end of the day, more code for you to maintain is not a place that you want to be. So, I'm just Get back. Here. So abstract inheritance obviously gives you abstraction of your code. And you now have separate files with files for Windows 8 and files for Windows Phone. And it minimalizes the conditional code. So you don't have these sort of if statements do this, then do or otherwise do that, which can be very error-prone. Sometimes you'll get it back to front, and you'll be debugging your code. It probably will never be code that ends up in your production environment, but it's not an efficient way to work. It still has, however, some conditional code. So you may do things like have a factory pattern to get around that. So you might say, okay, you know, the if statements may end up being in your factory to tell you what object to instantiate, which you then end up using in an abstract manner. But at the same time, you still have this very platform-specific conditional statements, which, again, are error-prone. So the way that factories would work, just quickly go through it, instead of having, you know, if Windows Phone, create the Windows Phone Awesome class, and otherwise create the Windows 8 Awesome class. Rather than doing that with your factory, you could just reduce it to this. And then all of a sudden, you end up with your class very quickly, and then in your application initialization for your factory, you would have a factory for each platform. But then within those factories, you'd be creating all the objects, but you don't necessarily want to turn your entire project into a factory-based project because it ends up getting verbose. It ends up being a bit more maintenance that you possibly don't need. So then that brings us to partial classes. Now, partial classes are a great way to approach this because you end up with something that's quite clean. And initially you think, oh, partial classes, it sort of might be a bit of a dirty way to approach it. But you don't actually need the inheritance. You know, you only have one instance of this class. You know, you only have one copy of this class. It doesn't need to inherit from some sort of abstract class. It actually is, there's only one class on Windows Phone and there's only one class on Windows 8. So if we cut back across to the... So if I go in here... So here you'll notice at the top I still have like an if statement. And that's because if statements aren't bad, they're bad to have everywhere. And this just allows me to abstract this specifically. You can also use syndication equals so that you can reference it that way as well. But if I go down here, what we have is a partial class. Now, the partial class assumes that you know as a collective group or you know personally what needs to be there. So it's not really a great way to give someone a partial class and say, yeah, go nuts, go develop it for the other platform. Because as an abstract class or if you had an interface, you'd be able to define to people that these are the methods that are there. And maybe you could go and wrap an interface over the top of the class to ensure that that message was communicated on the other platform, that these are the methods that need to exist for this to compile, rather than them going through and finding where you're calling all these methods, they're actually being told they need to implement them. So what you'll find in the partial class is that there is the reader here, which has all the code that is platform agnostic. So all the code here will compile on each platform. And that's why, if you go up here, there's the if statement there, because this code is meant to compile across both platforms. You'll notice that if you look at the syndication items when it's read in, where is it? Oh, I won't bother finding it, it's not that important. But when it actually reads in the actual data, you'll notice that the load method sits in this other class. So sorry, I did that a bit quick. So here's the reader, that's the cross-platform stuff, and here is the rest of the partial class. Now this file only exists in the Windows Phone project. It doesn't exist in the Windows 8 project. And you'll notice in here that we have the partial classes, I've put them in the same file, but we have the partial classes for the article, which has the method for setting the publish date. And then if we scroll down, you'll notice that the loading here is very specific to the Windows Phone platform loading mechanism. We haven't had to create new constructors. We haven't had to called parent methods. So we haven't had to write any of that code, so it's really shrunk down this platform-specific code, so it's not confusing. People come in, they look at it and go, okay, fantastic, that's the code that I need to update. I know where it is, it's in the right file. So by going over to the much larger font in Windows 8, if we go across to the reader here, you'll notice that this is the same file, this is the same generic class that cross-compiles. We go up the top, we can see that we have the different namespace that we've brought in. And again, reading through it, it's just all the same code that we saw before. But for Windows 8, you'll notice that we have the Windows 8 code sitting here. So the benefits of this approach is that it really reduces your code. But I wouldn't start here. If you were going to take your existing Windows Phone project or maybe your Windows 8 project to bring the Windows Phone, you should start with the if approach because it'll let you understand where the discrepancies are and it'll actually end up... This code, if you remember from the abstract code, this code here that we see here, which when we were doing the if statements, is actually... this code here. So that's what helped us identify that code that we could then abstract at a later date. If you go and try and create the abstraction and the beautiful architecture off the front foot, you'll probably get it wrong. And by actually using the if statements, you can learn at the same time. You're not doing anything destructive to the other code and you get to actually compare the behaviors of them without having to then go and create other files. But then when you sort of then take the next step, you probably go from that to a partial class. You don't really need to use an abstract class. There's no reason to. You don't need the inheritance. Okie dokie. Come across. So abstract code for the platform. So that, you end up abstracting all that code across the different platforms. So they're not aware of the code on each. They're in different files. It makes it really easy for you to maintain and run in source control. You don't have these conditional block statements everywhere. So, that also removes that sort of maintenance nightmare. There's no factories for the platform specific. So even though the factory method did abstract it, all of a sudden now I just go create new objects and I've got that new object. And I know it's specific for that platform. I don't have to worry about setting up a factory and anything like that. It's just there on the platform. I know it's going to compile. It's very clean, it's very readable, and it's very simple. And one of the drawbacks, I think, is that sometimes because it's so clean and so simple, the cross-platform usage may not be evident. And that's why in my file names here, I actually have the platform for which they're for. And the reason being is that it makes it really obvious. I did have them called effectively 1 and 2, but now they've got different names. So portable libraries. So I'm just going to go through portable libraries for a second. So some of you may have used portable libraries in the past. Portable libraries are libraries that you can use across all platforms that they are targeting. So I'm going to go into here and I'll just actually go file. Actually, I'll go to this. Add new project. And I'm actually going to create... Oh, sorry. Apologies for that. So I'll go in here and go, not to there, go in here and go add new project. And when I go into the, rather than just add a class library, which would be a Windows Store specific class library, I'll go here and I'll pick a portable class library. And I won't worry about the name, we'll just call it portable class library 1, that's fine. And when you create the portable class library, it actually asks you what platforms do you want to target. So because we're targeting Windows Phone and Windows 8, we'll only need to use .NET for Windows Store apps and Windows Phone 7 and higher. I'm not targeting Silverlight, and I'm not targeting the .NET Framework 4.5. So by using a portable library, I can create that, and if I wanted to add it as a reference, it doesn't really do anything, but if I wanted to add it as a reference to my project, here it is here, I can actually add it as a reference to my Windows 8 project. But what I can also do is, if I build it, and then go into here, grab grab that directory. I know I'm going through this quick. So I just built that project. So I've got the DLL. So the DLL is an actual binary. It's a physical file. It's not a project. And I go across to the phone and I add a reference. And hopefully I built it the right way. Otherwise, it's going to not look like magic. And I can add that DLL to that project. Now, if I just built a .NET 3.5 or 4.5 DLL, I wouldn't have been able to do that. And that's because the tech stacks are different. So by just using a library, and it goes back to your point before, the portable libraries are amazing. They're fantastic, but they are very lowest common denominator. You don't have access to the syndication library in that portable library. So if I go back to here, and I actually want to add a reference to that, you'll notice that when I actually go to here, actually, assemblies, there we go. That's the assemblies that I can add. So there's no extended assemblies. If I go to the other project, you'll notice here, if I go add reference, where are we? What's that? Someone say something? No. If I go through here, I can add, you know, I can add a platform dependency for Flickr, but I can't go in the portable library and go and add the references. Is that working? Where is it? So if I actually pick this and added it, what? Pardon? Oh, no, I know why that added it. The reason that added it, if you actually then go and use that library, if you go and use that library from the phone, it'll actually say it can't find the classes for when you're on phone, because the Flickr.net library is not a portable library. Flickr.net has targeted libraries for each platform, but it doesn't actually have a actual portable library that you can use. So if I go into back into here, where are we? No, that's another one. We go into here. And so, sorry. .NET. So here I have a Flickr.NET Windows Phone 7 DLL. But because my portable library is dependent on a non-platform dependent, sorry, a non-portable library, I end up with the problem that I can't, my portable library can't be used because it's dependent on things that are not platform independent. So you need to be very careful that actual tree of your portable library needs to be portable and platform independent. So it goes back to the point, why wouldn't you just use a library across everything? You actually, because that portable library has to be platform independent, it actually lacks all the frameworks that you will get. So, portable library? No, I would not recommend using portable libraries for your entire application. So, if I was to have a look at what's great about portable libraries, it's write once. So you just sort of write once, and you can use it on everything. But you end up with like one project, so you don't have this multiple project approach with files that are linked in, and that's quite beautiful as well. One set of code, obviously, same as when you're linking files, but it's sort of in that one project that you're maintaining. And it's obviously the fastest. You know, you can just go and build the library, start using it, and there's no issues. But do I have a drawback slide? That's right. Currently, there's no targeting for dependencies. So I initially, and I was going to show an app in a second, I started building a Flickr app. That's what was in my recents. And I started with a portable library. And I added the Flickr as a dependency to the portable library. So if I start adding code to that portable library that uses the Flickr library, that's when you start to see the issues. It's quite interesting because you don't see them initially, as I sort of proved with my magic trick that went wrong. So the thing is that when you start using that library, that's when you start to see the issues. All your dependencies need to be portable libraries. And at the moment, you don't have platform-specific targeting. And what I mean by that is it'd be beautiful to have a portable library which you could say, these references are for when I'm targeting this platform and these references are for when I'm targeting this platform. And if you had that ability, so you could have the FlickrNet Windows Phone 7 libraries, and you could have the FlickrNet, which is .NET 3.5 from memory libraries, then you'd be in this great place where, you know, you knew that that portable library worked across those platforms. And then if I added Xbox, it should then complain and say, well, you don't have one for that platform. Right now, portable libraries, you don't have that platform-specific targeting.
It's like you could build two versions, right? One for each platform. But you still have one body of code.
Yes, which is what I was showing you before. So, but you can't have that one body of code that you build for each platform. You won't be able to do that with a portable library, because you will be using a specific framework that's not available in the other target. So the portable library is trying to stop you from making code that won't compile across everything. So if you need to create separate separate projects or separate targets that you're going to build, what you're actually doing is not creating a portable library, you're creating two libraries. So the approach of then using partial classes allows you to have that common set of code, and only where there's discrepancies, use those discrepancies. And I think the other problem with portable libraries as well, which is up there, it constrains the capability, which we've just discussed, but it also constrains thinking. You will stop using the best approach because you will probably opt for the one that the portable library supports, which might not actually be, you know, there might be a lowest common denominator, but the portable library framework doesn't support it. So portable libraries are going to be really good if you've got a calculator method or things that you know that are always going to be, you know, cross-platform. I'm not saying they're bad, but for your whole application, you need to really understand that there's probably a place to have a portable library where one day you might find, hang on, this actual method here that we're using, the partial classes or inheritance or using if statements, we can actually, that actually is supported by a portable library. Let's go whack it in there. That's the best approach. If you can put it in a portable library, put it there. But I think using portable libraries as your first foot forward is not the right approach, because you'll end up sort of more boxed in. So, and that's where it's sort of, I think it's worth talking about just WinRT libraries. So with Windows 8, WinRT's, you know, all the rave, and WinRT doesn't run on Windows Phone 7. That's one of the problems. But I think if people are talking about, you know, well, if I want to use a WinRT library everywhere, so this is less specific about phone and Win8, but maybe between your Windows 8 applications, I just want to show you a quick demo, because a lot of times people ask me about this too. How are we going for time? Yeah, we're good. So if I come back in here and go across to here, so this is a Windows 8 project. It's not a phone project. But I'll reload this project. And you'll notice, and simple person actually is not talking about simple people. It's just a simple approach. If you were to build a WinRT class, and your class was going to be called simple person, and you had a simple employee, and this is, you know, just a simple inheritance example, hence why it's called simple. You would do this, and you would think that would be fine. And you want to have that in your WinRT library because you want to be able to use it from C++, you want to be able to use it from JavaScript, and you want to be able to use it from C#. And what you'll find is it won't actually compile. The reason it won't compile is you can't export unsealed types. What that means is you can't export classes that can be inherited from. So the approach is... If I seal that class, then all of a sudden I don't have that problem. I'm not exporting an unsealed class. And then it says, oh, hang on, no, simple employee is not sealed either. So then I go and seal that class. And then it tells me, hang on, simple employee inherits from a class that can't be inherited from. So I go and fix that by doing this. And then it tells me that that class is not sealed and it can't be exported. So you end up in this, sort of loop where you can't do this. And so again, this is another example of, if you want to dive in and create a WinRT class, you need to be quite careful that it's not as simple, pardon the pun, as you think. So if I go across to the approach that you could have for this, is that then you can expose interfaces. So by exposing interfaces, you then can have these classes that actually don't necessarily inherit from these classes that are sorry, these classes that aren't sealed, you're not exposing them, so they can't be inherited from something externally. And then you will have to go and create a factory, which isn't there, to go and produce them for you within the WinRT library. So you'll need a factory to hand you the class from there, an instance of that class, rather than you going and creating it yourself, because you'll just get the interface. Because we don't want you to be inheriting from a WinRT class. So that's just something I wanted to touch on quickly, because it's one of those things that, especially with WinRT coming to Phone 8, and people are going to go and create these portable libraries, and even a very simple use case sort of shows you that there's going to be a very specific use case for WinRT. But if it's the same language and you're using C#, then WinRT's, you don't need to use WinRT. There's other approaches that you can use. Okay. Yeah, shoot. Correct.
So that's the whole idea of building the WinRT.
Yes.
So if you use interface, will it still work? Is it best place to use that, or instead of using a portable class
No, I think you should use WinRT when you want to bridge the gap between the languages. As WinRT evolves over time, it might become, a much more streamlined thing, but, that's speculation. I think at the moment it's when you need something between languages. So if you are building, your front-end team's building the front-end apps, but the actual business team that are building all the business logic are building in C#, and they want to expose that logic to the guys that are building in HTML, then you are in a scenario where you need to use WinRT. But if your front-end guys are building in C#, and the guys that are doing all the logic, and I don't mean server-side logic, the logic in the app, maybe they're doing the integration with a banking system or something. So it needs to have a lot of rigor around it and have those guys doing their thing really well, have the UI guys doing their thing really well. But if that's in XAML in C#, and this is in C#, then you don't need to use WinRT. And you shouldn't, again, put that foot forward. Don't start in WinRT, because it's like a portable library in the sense that it will constrain what you can do. It's done on purpose so that you can use it from other languages, and that's why you inheritance is one of those things that if you had a JavaScript inheriting from C# and that sort of stuff, that can get quite complex. It's there to constrain on purpose so that you can bridge the gap between the languages.
So you really have to think like way up ahead, or you're planning to build a Win8 tablet and a desktop version. I mean, desktop version run better with XAML, but in the tablet it's much more rich if you're running it in HTML.
We'll do questions at the end. I'll fill questions at the end because I want to keep moving. Totally valid. Bring it up later, because if it's a good question, you might get that. So if you be quiet, actually that's not a promise. So it's a totally valid question. So the other thing I want to show you is the way that I've been approaching it, and the way that you learn eventually as you go along with partial classes and things like that. There is an approach that won't always work, but it's a way, and it depends on what you're actually doing. Just to go through again, really, I just said before, WinRT is for JavaScript, C#, C++. It's one set of code and one project, so you've got something that runs across everything. But it's not for Windows Phone 7. It should only be used when cross-language is required. It's not saying that you couldn't use it when it's just C# and C#. Maybe you want to create a capability for the future, but if you're starting today, you probably don't want to use it as your front foot. It's not ideal for legacy code. As I showed you, very simple inheritance becomes very complex. So if you're taking a legacy code base and you think, well, yeah, we're going to make this available for everyone in WinRT, the job is a bit bigger than you expect. And that's what I mean, look before you leap. You really need to understand WinRT before you start working with WinRT. It's great. It's fantastic. Cross-language libraries, amazing. But it's not necessarily just for everyday libraries. So the last approach I call, because there's just really no name for it, is lowest common denominator. Really, this is writing your code in a way that you know will compile across both platforms. Now, I used the syndication example before because I knew that it really broke the mold, and it actually creates a bit of destruction in the sense that syndication items have different methods. There's these intricacies. It's not just a matter of changing the package names. So I'm going to just open up a couple of projects here for think that's it. Yes, it is. And I'll be with you in a second. I'm just opening them, so I'm just going through all my super secret client work that I'm doing as I open. Save changes. No. Is that right? Yes, it is.
So if I cut back.
So this is an application that I've written. I've got the phone one here, and I'll just run it up. It's just a Flickr application, and I don't think I changed something in it, which is going to look like it's incredibly egotistical, but you'll see in a second. The application is really just hitting Flickr. So it's using that FlickrNet library that I was using before. And this is just called Awesome Photos. And I actually just type my name in as a test. And I'm not saying that photos of me are awesome. It has a few things that it uses. It uses the search API. It pulls back a heap of stuff from the Gold Coast. If we go across here, it's got some galleries. So I just added some galleries to my Flickr account. One's actually duplicated. But I added these galleries to my Flickr account so that I could sort of filter some of the images, because just doing searches can actually... I was testing this the other day, and that's why I added that, because it was actually not too healthy. And so there's the application. So if I just go through and quickly just describe it, because I don't want to run too short on time. I can go in here, and you'll look at the references for the projects. I use the FlickrNet Windows Phone 7 library. And up here, I've got this awesome Phone 7 class library, which also references it. So they both reference it because they need the types. I don't need to totally abstract the photo class from Flickr. It's just that all the interactions with Flickr I'm going to put into these classes. Now, these classes, all the platform dependency sits within the Windows, the FlickrNet library. Now, something important is that on Windows Phone, there is no synchronous method calls in the library, but on Windows 8 there are synchronous method calls and asynchronous method calls in the library. So what's really important to note is that if you are taking this approach, you need to make sure that those libraries for each platform have a similar API. The FlickrNet library is fantastic, but I don't want to use synchronous anyway because asynchronous is better. So what I've done in my code is I go through here and all this code, including all the comments, cross-compile. So that code is the same code for each platform, the same files. There are no additional files. And so what I can do is I can pull all that data in and use it on the other platform. And I'm going to show you just how quickly that can be done in a moment. And here I've got the view models. So the view models themselves, and so there's the search there. Let's change it to something like TechEd. And we'll run it up again. And so the actual... actual view model that sits behind that view is also cross-compiling. And I'll show you that I'll be using it across each. So here, there's no photos on Flickr for TechEd. Oh, there we go. Hopefully none of you are there. So here we've got this big grid of photos coming back with all the photos from TechEd. So I'll close that up. And my challenge is that I finish on time. I'm going to go and create a Windows 8 app that just sort of pulls in one of those feeds and puts it on the screen. So I go in here, I go File, I'll add it to this, hopefully that doesn't cause a problem. File New Project. What I'll do is I'll create a Windows Store app, and I'll create a grid app, and we'll just call it App 2. Away we go. So here's App 2. Can search for it. It's fantastic. And so what I'm going to do here is I'm going to be going quite quick just to show that it can be done. So go through here. And in the application, in the startup of the application, my actual view model sits within the actual application. So if I go back to this application, go in here, and I'll just add it to that class. This is probably not the best place to drop the code, but that'll do there. I need to go and add some references. I need to add a reference to the FlickrNet library. The other thing that I need to do, I need to go and add a new project. Is that right? Yes, a new class library. And so in that class library, Let me just get rid of these two. I don't know. So within the class library, I've got that. I need to go and add the FlickerNet library. And then I need to go in and I'll also add existing items. And where are we? Oh, we've got lots of projects sitting in there. I'm going to add... Am I in the right place? Yes, I am. Sorry. Here we go. So I'm going to go and add those as a link. So there they are. And if I go back up here, I've added that. And the other thing I'm going to add as a reference is in my solution, I'm going to add class library as a reference as well. One failed. Oh no, we're all good here. So I now come back here. Obviously, we want to, you know, using the awesome class library view models, bring that in. And here we've got our view model. It's all working. The next thing we want to do is on launch. Again, you know, this is probably not best practice. It's just best speed. We want to load the data for that view model. So that at this stage, the application will probably just go and load all the data. But I want to sort of just take it a bit further and actually have it so you can see it. So if I go to the group items page, in the XAML on the group items page, you'll notice there's a data source or a collection view source which is defined. So this was just, you know, this is just the default sample and it's called grouped items view source. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to go in here and in the here where it is currently assigns the data, I'll actually bind it to the galleries that we saw before. So those galleries where we saw just those icons that were the galleries for my account. So that's just been bound to that. So that should bind the galleries to the view model. And then if I go across to the view, one of the issues is going to be that we're not going to see those photos because it's set up for something else. So I can just delete the current item template and I'll go into my grid view and create an item template. And I recommend you do this in Blend, not in code, but this is again just to do it nice and quick. Data template, I'll add a grid with its a width of 200, its a height of 200. And then I'll make the grid background an image brush and make the image source binding to the data. I think it's called large URL from memory. And then the other thing I'll do is I'll add text block. Why not? I'm in the wrong spot. Text block. And we'll make the text binding to the title. Now again, these are the properties of a photo. So a FlickerNet photo has a large URL and it has a title. And hopefully, if I close my eyes, with the magic of technology, beautiful, fantastic. And so just then I've gone and taken a Windows Phone application that was loading photos from Flickr in about 5, 6 minutes, 8 minutes, whatever it was. And here you can see that it's also going through and it's pulling through those photos from the collection data. So if you write your code the right way, you can reuse it really quickly. So I didn't go back and forth and back and forth on this. I got it working. I knew I was using the library and I'd sort of done a bit of research to make sure that they had the same APIs and I could reuse them. And then I made sure that I wasn't using platform-specific code. So if you find that you want to use a wait in the sink for Windows 8, which is fantastic, and it's sort of really beautiful way to work and it's very quick, you feel free to use it, but you need to understand that then you'll have conditional code across your platforms. If you want to have one set of code that you can use across anything, then the lowest common denominator approach works quite well. And the other reason it works quite well is because you're not actually sitting within a project that's of a very specific type, you can then adapt to the other approaches. So if I go back to my slide deck, you know, you end up with one code base and one set of files. You actually don't have one project. So you do need to import those files into another project. And this is that same code compiling to two libraries, which you brought up previously. Why couldn't you just do that? Well, sometimes you can do that. You need the dependent libraries, and then need to have the platform-specific code, which works great when you're not writing them. But if you are writing them, you still end up needing to go through that. It does require a lot of foresight. So, as I said, you probably wouldn't start on this foot. You probably would, learn and understand what the intricacies are over time, and that's why using the if off the start is really good. It's this really simple way to get into it until you realise you need to maintain all of that code. Very fast porting. If you know that it's lowest common denominator from the framework perspective, it's very fast porting. And it can adapt to any other approach, as I said. Again, because it's lowest common denominator, it constrains thinking. If it's a lot faster for you to write two different ways for two different platforms, go do it that way. So don't just think, oh, okay, lowest common denominator, because then I'll only have one set of code. But actually it might be harder to maintain that one piece of code, trying to make sure it works on everything, than it is to have these partial classes with the platform specific separately. Again, it's not the best way to learn. You'll learn through pain, not necessarily through learning. And you'll need to do a lot of cross-checking, back and forth between your projects, because you're not as aware as to how you're impacting the other project as you're working on one. So, hopefully, that convinced you that you can develop across both platforms. You should probably start now. Probably if you've got a Windows Phone 8, start developing it on Windows 8, thinking about how you can reuse your code. If you've got a Windows 8 app, start thinking about, how would you bring that to Windows Phone? The ecosystem's about to explode, and you want to make sure that you're everywhere. If you don't have an existing app, go and create a tablet and desktop experience on Windows 8 and then bring it across. Or maybe you want to go and create, companion and portable experiences to Windows applications, so something people can take with them. So this Flickr application that I built just before, it might end up doing things like upload, tag, add to gallery, do lots of very complex interaction. But then I can go and very quickly build a companion app that can go and bring up my photos and look at my photos. So if you think about workforce automation or your line of business applications, you can have something very complex on someone's desktop. But all the libraries that do all the interactions, you can already pull across to phone. And then it's about how you're going to use those and what you want to do with those. And lastly, and I see this a lot, I have all these people that come up to me and show me these amazing applications, and they never hit the marketplace. If you're making an app, you need to publish it. If you want to know how to publish it, you need help publishing it, you can always come and talk to me or get in contact with me on fawn.knight@nokia.com. But make sure that you publish your apps. They don't exist until they're published, and it's one of the downfalls. So going from 7.5 to 8, so I need to be careful about what I talk about, because a lot of the stuff's not necessarily announced. But Windows Phone 7 apps will run on Windows Phone 8. So in regards to do you need to do anything to port them, from what I understand is they will run on Windows Phone 8. Well, Windows Phone 7 is not running with the WinRT kernel. And I really can't comment about the development platforms, unfortunately. They haven't been announced yet, so I'm not really meant to talk about it. But, the way to think about it is that, moving forward, a lot of this is going to unify. And whether it's one of the things that, Microsoft or .NET developers have is they have the best developer story. And when something comes out that's a little bit better, but it's not perfect, if you go look at the other platforms that you develop on, they have some really giant pain points in regards to how easy they are to develop, the cost of development, the tooling, all that sort of stuff. It's just so far inferior. So what you have now is so superior, and what you're going to get will just keep improving.
Yeah.
So one of the things you need to understand is that the current market as Windows Phone 7 devices, if you ignore them, you need to be, that's something you need to take into account. So, you, if you, 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 it's also the sentiment that goes with that. You'll be the guy that ignore the Windows Phone 7 guys. You know, so. Just want to say quickly, tomorrow I'm going to be talking about, or we'll get some questions, tomorrow I'm going to be talking about key consumer experiences. I'm just going to be talking about live tiles and how you can make them a lot richer than what you're probably doing. It's surfacing the latest article. Is sort of, you know, sort of day one live tile technology, and we want to sort of build that out. I'm also doing a game development session tomorrow. I think it's probably going to be one of the last sessions. It's going to be a lot of fun. I'll be giving away a heap of T-shirts, so if you want one of these, which is a game, we've got these T-shirts. If you want them before the session and you want to come along wearing it, I'll be by the Nokia stand. What else? Feel free to come and talk to me if you see me anyway and want to talk about phone development. That's why I'm here, is so that people can talk to me. You, sir.
It's probably a bit similar to that one, but it's particularly to do with Windows 8. So we've got x86 and ARM now. We need to put much focus or thought into what assemblies we reference with regard to that.
From my experience, because I actually haven't actually built for ARM, but from my experience, what I've seen in 8, Windows 8, is... No, so the approach is going to be for Windows Store applications that you have the one application. I think the thing that people need to be more mindful of is performance. So building applications for beefy machines and less powerful machines. You know, it's still fast, but you know, some people will go full x86, you know, or x64, you know, really powerful machines, and then go, oh, my app doesn't run on an ARM device. You know, so. Not at the moment that I know of, but I think you know, if you're using ReSharper, I mean, ReSharper's not installed here. If you're using ReSharper, it's always going to sort of speed things up. I mean, it's a great sort of add-on on top of Visual Studio. I think the process itself for the time being, you know, is still going to be sort of going through things manually. But it takes about, you know, it doesn't take a long time for a simple application. I think going from phone to desktop, phone to slate, where the phone apps are generally the use cases are a bit more simple, they're a bit more bite-sized. I think it's a lot easier to analyse there and take to slate. But if you're going from slate back, where you might have a really complex scenario on a desktop, that's where I think you probably find that the use case is a bit more complex to go through and analyse. Any more questions? You, sir. In terms of performance, noticeable performance. There's no noticeable performance on the actual devices. The fastest in performance would probably be the if statement, simply because it's done at compilation, and there's no sort of no other structure there. But I don't have any metrics on it because it would be negligible, like it would be nanoseconds, like, and I can't count them. So that question was around performance and which approach is the best performance. I forgot to repeat the question. I'll go over here. You, sir.
Is it language specific? Can I use F-sharp for my model?
Not sure specifically, because I haven't gone through that use case. I assume you might run into problems if you're going between the two different platforms, especially because the tooling across both of them is separate. Separate IDEs.
With the inheritance example,
yes.
If you name the two derived classes the same, would you still need a factory pattern?
With the inheritance example, if you name the two derived classes the same, would you need an inheritance pattern? No, it's because I didn't. Yeah, good point. If you called them the same, you wouldn't need an inheritance pattern. I think the reason that they're named differently was, and very much so, is because they're their own class implementations, their own file implementations. It's more to know which one you're looking at when you're actually in the file. But if you structure your projects properly, you can still name it Phone 8. You can just inside have the same name. And in fact, that's what I, in one of the partial examples, that's actually what I've actually done, is they've got the same name. Async await, yep.
Cut.
can't comment on SDK stuff. Just remember, guys, there is a prize. Yeah, hang on. So that question was... I can't comment on that. I can't. I'm sorry. Yes.
I'm just interested on the considerations of the assistance on the Windows Phone app. So if you've got, I mean, obviously it's great for keeping the services, but you want to actually work offline with some of the data locally.
Yep. So the question's around storing data on the phone. So, but what's your question again? Sorry. Okay, come and talk to me afterwards, because it's sort of a bit different to the, you know, different consideration.
Just wondering about how you handle the assets between the two, because Windows 8 and Windows Phone, very different resolutions, certainly in the current state.
Yes.
Do you manage to sort of keep them within the separate projects that then reference those libraries, or do you try and create a common set of assets?
So the approach, I didn't do anything here because it was pulling down all the assets from the web, so they'll just... on the web. The approach that I'd be using, this is managing assets like images and things like that, the approach that I would be using is to have a folder with all those assets in it that have nothing to do with any of the projects, and within those folders having the assets for each platform.
So you have them separated per platform rather than common set that can be...
The reason for that is it'll be a lot easier for you just to include them in the project. So if you, it's a common set in a folder, but they're not in the one. And the reason being is that you can go straight in there, grab all those files, and you know that they're all the files for 7. So when you're compiling it, you're not having to click through them individually. You might want to name them if you wanted to, so it's obvious so you can sort them that way. But you need to be quite careful, because you can end up with all the Windows high-res binaries ending up in your phone application. There is for Windows 8. A lot of the open source libraries are coming across. I think the one thing for, and when you think about factory patterns and things like that, it works well in that scenario.
Well, that's sort of what I was thinking. You'd have a sort of class library with an abstract base implementation, then you'd have an individual class library that would be specific and have the actual one for the Windows 8 and the one.
Yeah, so if you're doing like an injection model, that would probably be the best implementation of an interface or abstract class scenario. I mean, I didn't really demo it there, but when you've got a factory, you sort of then put yourself in a situation where you actually could have injection. One of the things that I've found is some of the libraries, and if you are going to use any library, especially from the open source community, some of them don't pass certification for Windows 8. Store submission, so people will go through and build all their application using a library and then go to submit and find that actual library is not certified. So just be careful with what you're using. I haven't done any specifically, but I have seen them, and I was going to sort of demo it, and I thought, no, it's just, I'll run out of time, which I almost have. I guess if there's any feature set that you're using that you need, I think for all your data interactions, I think you probably should be careful, and you should probably stay on the same. Well, that would be my recommendation, unless you want to leverage a feature that's in the new platform. The main reason for that is, you know, if you're using, you know, something like SQL Compact for your application is obviously using it quite a lot. If it's just storing configuration data in it, probably shouldn't be a problem. And you need to abstract it if you're going to use a different version. And the reality is that if it's on Windows 8, you might find it behaves differently anyway. You know, the syndication feed is a good example of something so simple, yet it is different. So.
A bit of a comment, but consider it a question as far as the phone goes.
Yeah.
I've got some Windows phone apps that I'm planning to port to Windows 8, and I've always been envious of the async await stuff on Windows 8. So
yeah.
So whilst you don't get the
Yeah, so have the callback. So that was, so someone's ported the task, task of T for mono. Yep. So you can have the code that's similar, so that you don't have to go and have two totally different approaches, even though there might be two bits of code. Okay, I need to get to your question. What was your question? HTML, JavaScript, C++?
Yes.
If I was building any application on Windows 8 and Windows Phone, I would be using C# and XAML. Because of the speed, how fast you can build is just ridiculous. And the tools are their best there. So even though, you know, C++ integration is now come leaps and bounds, and you've got XAML and C++ and it works really well, and the HTML support and being able to actually change the style of the app in runtime within Blend is amazing. The speed of the tools and there's other things, the community, the library set that's out there within C#, you've got sort of compile time checks that you don't get in JavaScript. You know, it's you're going to find your best return there, unless you have some massive investment in JavaScript or massive investment in C++. Yeah.
In terms of like the devices that you get in phones and versus the desktop, like the location services and sending out SMSs, etc. If you wanted to go have a camera,
yep. To use the camera, the way that the actual like hardware, like the native hardware services, I'd be really careful in regards to thinking that they behave the same. So I think eventually they'll be nicely and unified. But at the moment, the way that a camera works on a phone is very different to the way that a camera works on a PC. And then you've got other things that just don't exist, dialer, SMS. All those sorts of things, and the platforms are going to be different. So I think it's really important to, when you're thinking about, I'm going to reach out to the camera, to how you're doing that. Now, a lot of the libraries that are in Windows 8 aren't on Windows Phone 7. So, and a lot of the approaches aren't on Windows Phone 7 for device integration and saying, hi, I'd like to be, I'm interested in getting a photo from the camera. The approach is very different. I mean, it's similar, like you're sort of requesting it, but you're not just taking it and spying on people, but you do need to be careful. I would separate it, yes. Yeah, and I would separate anything. If you're querying anything, I would just separate it because it's not a big overhead. And then one day you realize, I can put them together. You...
I've got an app idea, and I know it's not going to be just focused on one platform over the other.
Yeah.
So equal weightage over all the platforms. That's
yeah.
The tablet. What would you recommend? How would I start? Because that's where I'm kind of struggling with. Do I start with Windows Phone and then work on Windows 8? Do I go side by side?
Start with the app that you can build fastest, that you're more familiar with, and build out the first function, and then port that.
Okay. And you said focus on C#. Would that be something where I know that my apps, whether I start with Windows 8 or Windows Phone 8 or whatever, can I make sure that it actually work with the tablet experience, with the desktop experience, or is there something that I have
to... So the tablet and desktop experience question comes up a lot. Tablet and desktop experience are the same code base, the same binary running. How you ensure that experience works is totally separate to the underlying code. You know, how the visuals work, where the touch works, accelerometer, different views, different aspects. All of that are things that people just aren't used to. Last question.
With the Windows Phone is a restriction experience, so I can't have a restriction.
Sorry, I'm going to come over here because... Yes.
Whereas with the desktop, you don't.
Yes.
You've basically got anything you've got. So is that going to be a problem depending on what method you use?
No, I don't think it'll be a problem. You just need to be careful you don't include all the media elements that you've got for Windows 8 in your phone app.
Yeah.
I don't think anyone's going to have enough code that they blow the limit. If you do, I'm massively impressed. right? So like your fingers must be burning. You're probably programming right now. Like if you've got that much code, that's incredible. If you're going to include these massive libraries, then if they have a Windows Phone version, it's not going to be massive. So like the FlickrNet libraries has a lot more, not more features, but is much bigger for Windows 8 or for .NET than it is for Phone. And the reason, because it adds a heap of other methods that you just can't do on Phone. But at the end of the day, you use the Phone version for Phone. And that's it for the questions. Oh, okay, yeah, because you asked before. Okay, fine, last. I'm over time, I need to rush.
The tablet and the desktop, so they are they have no restriction on the number of size of the file deployed, right?
Yep.
They're both the same.
Same store, same binary.
Right, so the only thing left is the phone. That's the only difference.
Yeah, so the phone, you think, tablet, desktop, one binary, store, phone, separate binary, and think about it that with that approach, and only the phone has the restriction. So my phone, although there was a lot of good questions, my phone's going to go to the injection man up the back in the blue shirt, because that was actually probably the next thing I was going to do if I had more time. So thanks very much for coming. Again, if you want these shirts, I've got heaps of them. This year's developers are leaner and meaner because I've got a lot of really big sizes left. But come by. I'll be over there in about 10 minutes. All the shirts are over there. So if you've got any questions, come up now, but I might stroll that way. Well done.
Thank you.
That was
the whole time I was just sort of thinking about dependency injection with portable class libraries and
yeah.
Sort of classes for specific
things. And it's this weird scenario.